You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Welcome back. We continue. We'll talk to Tamika Catchings later. We already had Hannah Storm on as we are continuing to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Title IX. And our next guest has seen quite a bit in her life as just an amazing athlete. In her youth, an athletic director, the first female athletic director, the first director of women's athletics, I should say, at the University of Texas in the 70s, and an advocate for so many important issues in intercollegiate athletics, particularly for women. Donna LaPione joins us. Donna, thank you very much on a momentous day, and I'm particularly interested, as we say hello to you, just your thoughts, just remembering back this incredible period of time and how different things were when you were young and were playing ball, and hopefully we're all a little bit more comfortable where we are today. Good afternoon.
It's interesting because when I was growing up, there were no school sport opportunities for girls. I grew up on a street with 15 boys and one other girl. And I remember all I wanted to do was to be a pitcher for the New York Yankees. And I tried out for Little League Baseball. I was drafted number one in the Stamford, Connecticut, Mickey Leone Little League. And on the same day that we were drafted and lined up to get my very first uniform, official uniform, at the age of 10 or 11, a very tall father came to stand beside me. He opened the Little League rule book, and on page 14 in the center of the page were four words that would change my life forever. And those words were, "No girls are allowed." So we've come a long way from that point. And fortunately, there are now a great many young girls who will never have to face those words.
And when this happened 50 years ago,
More than that. This was the Little League rule was not challenged in the courts until 1973.
I didn't realize that. I'm curious, though, Donna, because, you know, we tend to talk about this, but at the time that all this was going on, can you take us back to that moment and tell us you had already played ball, you were moving into administration. What was it like at that point?
Well, I was the first director of women's athletics, as you said, at the University of Texas. And it was right at the start of Title IX. No one knew that Title IX applied to intercollegiate athletics or extracurricular activities until 1974. And then there were three or four efforts by members of Congress to amend it to exclude its application to football and basketball, which would have gutted it. But when the NCAA announced that it would, announced that Title IX applied to extracurricular activities, Darryl Royal, who was at the University of Texas at Austin as its football coach and athletic director, and who was also the president of the American Football Coaches Association, made national headlines. Title IX and women's athletics would be the death of big time football, and all hell broke loose. Mm. The media was on it like, sticky glue. And it was a good thing that the media was investigating that kind of an allegation, because they gave the people who were running women's athletics at the time, those were women physical educators, the time and the platform to explain why it was so important for girls to play sports, that girls who played sports were more likely to be successful in life after sport, to matriculate in college, to get better grades, to be at lower risk for breast cancer and sexual assault. The same benefits of sport accrue to boys and girls. And the message that parents heard was that, hey, it's as important for your daughter to play sports as your son. And that's why those efforts to undermine Title IX failed.
Donna, there's such great celebration today, but I'm particularly interested in your concerns, because it's one thing to celebrate, and I think everyone agrees it's important and momentous, but I also know that there are a lot of people who don't feel comfortable about where we are right now, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I just would like you to enunciate your concerns about where we are right now and where we go.
You bet. I'm one of them. We've made tremendous progress. In 1972, there were only 300,000 high school girls playing high school sports. Today, there's 3.4 million. Huge, huge increase. However, in 1972, there were 3.6 million boys playing high school sports. Today, there are 4.6 million boys playing high school sports. So the women haven't even caught up yet to the 1972 levels of opportunities for high school boys. 75% of all high school boys play sports, compared to 60% of all high school girls. And the college picture is just as similar. 56 to 60% of all college students are women, but only 44% of all athletic participation opportunities are given to women. Women are shortchanged about $1 billion a year in athletic scholarship money. And when you look at treatment and benefits, we're still not close. So while, you know, 50 years of progress is something we should celebrate, boy, there's a lot more to do.
As you hear people talk about it today, write about it, explain it in more detail to younger people who don't understand it, what important messages do you think need to continue to be harped on and continue to get out during this moment when we are paying attention? And sadly, we all move on the next day to other things. But while the floor is still and the spotlight is still on, what would you like to add to the conversation?
Well, the surveys around the 50th anniversary of Title IX revealed that most athletes, female athletes, and their parents have no idea what Title IX is. And I can assure you that athletic directors at high school and college level aren't about to tell them what their rights are. And they never have. And as a result, if you don't know your rights, you will not complain. You will not do anything about it. On top of all that, athletes and their parents are afraid to complain about inequities, even though they're fully aware of them, because the kids are afraid of making their coach unhappy, losing a starting position, losing scholarships. Parents do not want to put their children at risk in terms of retaliation. So the only time you hear about athletes complaining is when a school drops their sport and they have nothing to lose. And then they look for an attorney. And that's a very slow way to approach cultural change, one lawsuit at a time. But that's the situation we're in, because the government hasn't figured out yet how to make sure Title IX is fully implemented.
We know about the past 50 years. You've lived every day of it in some role that was meaningful. I know 50 years is too hard to look ahead, but just as you peer forward for young girls today, what do they look forward to, and what would you advise them as they get older and start to encounter many of the things that you did, and hopefully with a little more support?
Obviously, you know, every child should know their rights not to be discriminated against. But the one thing that has to be done that will close this, you know, still pretty big female participation gap in sports is for the government to go back and to look at the enforcement provisions of Title IX. All the Congress has to do is to say that as a condition of receiving federal funds, $130 billion in higher education alone that supports higher education. In order for a school to get that, if you have an athletic program, then you must be a member of an athletic association like the NCAA or your state high school association that specifies that Title IX compliance is a condition of membership and has a mechanism where every 3 to 5 years, they'll come in, take a look at it, and if there's an inequity, you know, give the school a year to remedy the inequity. But otherwise, if they don't fix an inequity, that they are ineligible to participate in postseason play. If you, if the carrot, if the incentive is that neither your son nor your daughter will vie for a state high school championship or be eligible for NCAA postseason play, believe me, we would approach gender equity much more quickly than we are now.
Donna Lapione on the 50th anniversary. Thank you again for being with us. It's always a pleasure. You be well.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much. What an interesting and important conversation. We'll take a short break. We'll get your reaction to that. Talk more about the big recruiting news of the day, the NBA draft a couple of hours away, baseball underway, a lot happening on a late June Thursday.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, welcome back here on a very, very busy sports day. We mentioned the Arch Manning announcement. We had a guest on yesterday and I believe also earlier in the week, both projecting that was where it was headed. Nobody knew when. Arch Manning decided to make it now. He happens to be down at the opening of the Manning Academy. He was with his entire family, uncles, grandfathers, et cetera. And who knows whether the decision was reached there. Squirrel is up next. Hello, Squirrel.
Yeah, I'd like to discuss Arch briefly, but first a question or two about the lady you just interviewed. That was an interesting interview, by the way. She was a former athletic director at the University of Texas.
She was the women's athletic director, yes.
That's what I thought, you know, the women's athletic director. And what is she doing now?
She's what organization? I think she's the head of the Drake Group.
Gotcha. That was interesting at the end.
She also runs her own sports marketing firm.
Gotcha. Well, it was interesting at the end when she talked about gender equity and about women catching up to men. And I would like to have known what her thoughts are on non-traditional women maybe competing in women athletics today. Not that that's a subject now. I would have been interested in hearing what her thoughts might be on that. But speaking of Arch, you know, I'm not disgruntled when I say this, and don't take it wrong, because the Mannings are worshipped here in Mississippi. But I've watched him on TV a few games, and I never was caught up in the hype, and I think Texas is a good place for him because I think both of them are overrated. I think he's overrated, and I think Texas is overrated. And that program, I mean,
let me ask you a question. How would you know whether he's overrated or not? He's a high school player.
Well, I mean, because just the hype has been so, I mean, I don't think he can live up to the expectations of him and that's just my opinion. Again, I may be wrong. But I feel like I'm entitled to my opinion. I just don't see him as the savior of Texas.
But I will tell you this, as great a player as he projects out to be inside the beltway of college football. I mean, there are some who wonder, are you getting more than just a college football player with him? I mean, there's a lot of conversation.
Well, I'm not saying he's a great kid. He's a great kid.
No, I'm not talking about that either. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Right, I do. But like I said, I don't know. I don't think he can live up to the hype. And I think there's other good players out there that's not getting the attention because of him. But we'll see. You know, in a couple of years, we'll see. And one last thing, I really appreciate you somehow getting nominated for this Ring of Honor thing. But it goes back to kind of what you said earlier today, which you really can't take things of this nature serious. And with that in mind, you know, I've got some ideas for you on this thing. I think you should maybe nominate 10 per year and then pick 5 or 6 and then let the rest maybe carry on to next year and add more to it. Or maybe if they don't deserve it, don't put them on there. But if I had to pick my 6 for this year, I would pick Shane and Tammy and Bobby from Birmingham, who are no longer with us and well-deserving, of course. And then I'd have to go with 3 current guys that are, you know, entertaining, which are I-Man and Jim and even Legend. And then, like I said, you know, you can let the rest be like you said yesterday, how did I get on that list? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, so, Squirrel, with all due respect, I don't know how you got it. I think you must have paid somebody off.
I don't know either. I was as surprised as,
I'm not sure.
I was as surprised as you were.
Okay, I'm not sure you're staying on that list.
How did Pat from Georgia, how did Miss Pat not make it is my question. But,
what about the, who's that old lady up in Virginia? I can't remember her name.
No, Mildred or not Millie? No. But, hey, thanks for taking my call. Great
Thank
show.
You, Aloha. I didn't mean that old lady. I meant that older. I mean, shame on me, okay? Noah is up next in Destin, Florida. Hello, Noah.
Hello. Paul, I wanted to ask you a few questions.
Okay. Noah, how old, by the way, hold on. Noah, how old are you, by the way? I want to make sure you're legal.
I'm about to turn 11.
And oh, okay. You're legal.
5 months before, I don't know.
You're old enough.
Yeah. Were you in Destin, Florida at all this week?
Not yet.
Well, what are you going to, what are you talking about?
I have not been there, but I will be there.
Tomorrow?
That is correct.
Yeah. So I wanted to know, what are you talking about tomorrow at the Alabama State Bar meeting tomorrow?
Now, before I answer your question, Noah, I have to find, are you a member of the bar?
No, but my dad is. He's an attorney.
So I take it that you guys are at the state bar meeting, right?
Yes.
Where do you live when you're not in Destin?
Birmingham, Alabama.
I'm familiar with that city. Well, you know, it's a good question, Noah. Let me get some help from you, as some of you may be able to discern. I'm speaking at a meeting of the Alabama Bar Association. And what do you think people like your dad would like to hear?
Sports, I guess.
Let me assure you, I won't be offering advice to them on constitutional crises or torts or contract laws or civil liability. I am going to talk about the same thing there that I do here. How about that?
Yeah, that'd be nice. I think you would like a break from all the
have the events been pretty, has he said whether they're interesting or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to be there?
No, I will be at the beach and my dad will be playing golf, so he's going to miss it.
Oh, well.
So.
Hey, Noah, any chance I could hang out with you at the beach and maybe we could send a ringer in?
Well, I think that'd be nice, but I don't know.
Yeah. Kind of committed, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking forward to going down there, but you kind of ruined my day. I forget that I'm going to be at the beach and never see it.
Well, yeah.
But I will tell you this, I was at the same place 3 weeks ago, so, and I did see the beach. So I am well aware of the environment.
Yeah. Well, you should just take, well, you are just talking. So
yeah.
What time is this meeting that you have to be there?
I think it's at 12 o'clock tomorrow.
Well, maybe after that, you could go to the
beach. Why don't you, if your dad's obviously playing golf, why don't you ask him if you can come as my guest?
Well, sure.
Yeah. We could just hang out together and maybe I could, you're taking your dad's place. Is that a deal?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Noah, I look forward to seeing you down at the beach.
You too.
You take care of yourself. Noah, obviously breaking news there. Let's check out a guy who will not be there tomorrow. Thank goodness, because I think everybody would be scared to death. That's AC in New Jersey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking my call. You know what? That kid made a better call than Jim from Tuscaloosa has ever made in the last two decades. Now, let's talk about Mr. Concussion Man, Ahman. You know, it's funny what you said last night, Ahman. I have my sources. This is where it gets funny, Mr. Feinbaum. That boy, he called a radio station down in Charlotte and in Georgia. He calls me out over there. Concussion Man, I'm calling you out on Mr. Paul Feinbaum's show. What are you confused about, farm boy? I am here. So a guy named Jim from Tuscaloosa calls you a monkey. Well, I'm not going to go there.
Say something remotely interesting.
Losers. Damn, stop playing that damn thing. Now, this is what I'm going to say. Man, or should I call you Concussion Man? If I smash you again, you're going to be in Jim from Tuscaloosa's basement. That's what's going to happen to you. And as far as all the losers are concerned, stay away, because Mr. Paul Feinbaum, his cheerleaders and myself, we're running the show. Jim, like I said, homie, you are past, homie. Get used to me, gymnasium. I got to go.
Say something remotely interesting.
We are coming back. Long way from the end. We're only beginning. We're 90 minutes in on a four-hour Thursday. Stick around.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Talking about it, and Tamika will join us next hour. Let us continue right now with more phone calls. And Pat is up next in Florida. Hello, Pat.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. I love your show. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
Just want to ask a few questions and give you a few opinions on a few items as well. First of all, I have to say I respectfully disagree with Kirby over Dabo is the number two coach, and I know you put Dabo number three, but I mean Dabo, two national championships, 6 consecutive years in the playoffs, a winning record in the playoffs, and he took a program that was kind of a top, let's say 10-15 program, and made it the second best program of the country. And if you kind of use the logic of the most recent performance, I guess you could almost put Kirby ahead of Saban and put him number one and put Saban number two. But that's just a minor point. I agree with about 85% of your opinions on items, but that one I think I'd have to go Dabo number two for sure. And then a couple questions and comments. If Jimbo over at Mr. Tough Talk in Texas, man, over there at A&M, if he goes 4-4 again this year, and let's say he is lucky enough to win his incredibly weak non-conference schedule with a bunch of patsies, and finishes 8-4 with a 4-4 SEC record. Do you think he'll survive at A&M? That's one question.
Not for long, no.
Okay.
Even though his buyout would be $85 million, if he does no better than 8-4 again, I would say the heat on him will be hotter than taking a weekend trip to the planet Mercury.
Do you think a 4-4 conference record, he'd survive another year?
Yeah, I think he would because they're stuck. I mean, the AD would be in charge is the same guy that just gave him an extension to keep him there versus going to LSU.
Make Gus's buyout look like chump change.
Yeah, he would be trending toward the biggest buyout of all time.
Like corporate America.
Exactly.
A prediction for this year, speaking of SEC coaches, Lane Kiffin. I think last year he was very fortuitous. He had, in my opinion, probably the second, third best quarterback in the country, arguably maybe the best quarterback. It didn't have, you know, Alabama's players around him. He's not going to have Corral this year. I think Lane Kiffin goes 3-5 in the SEC. Again, a weak non-conference schedule. He might finish with a winning record based on the non-conference wins. And I think the Lane Kiffin little short-term love affair with this genius, again, a product of Nick Saban and Alabama's offense with the most talented offense by far the past decade in college football, no different than Sarkisian and Bill O'Brien and da-da-da-da-da, the name goes on. And, of course, you know, all managed, microscoped under the legend himself, Saban. So I think Lane Kiffin and the Twitter man himself is going to be under a lot of pressure this year. And I think the Ole Miss crowd is not going to think he's quite the genius that many others might predict. And then goes into my next question with regard to the SEC coaching fraternity, and I'll use that word fraternity. Why do you think there are zero black coaches in the SEC right now? Of course, you know, Vanderbilt, you know, had a black coach for several years, Mason, who was let go a few years ago. But you look at the SEC, and there's, 10 states. It's got a population base, plus or minus, if you look across those 10 states, on an aggregate basis, around 20% of the population is black. And black players probably make up 75%, give or take, of the SEC rosters. And there are zero head coaches. And it seems like the trend now is finding a 40-some-year-old WASP. And I'm a WASP, so I'm one of them. And again, I could care less if they're Protestant, Catholic, Muslim, whatever, agnostic, atheist, whatever. But nonetheless, my opinion on the matter is that Greg Sankey and his cabinet there at the SEC, they need to go ahead and implement immediately a true affirmative action program in the SEC, whereas there has to be a minimum at any given point in time, 2 SEC coaches that are black. And that would represent, you know, roughly 15% of the 14% of the 14 teams, and that means that the next 2 coaches that are released, fired, bought out, whatever word you want to use, they would have to be replaced by black coaches. So if A&M says, you know what, Jimbo, 4-4 is just not good enough, you're out of here. The next 2 coaches in the SEC that have to be hired, and then if a black coach is fired, you've got to hire a black coach to replace them. And that, by all means, doesn't mean, in my opinion, that there should only be 2 black coaches in the SEC. If there ends up being 3, 4, 5, whatever, 6, that's fine. But the SEC has a major problem, in my opinion, with diversity, and it's really following suit with the NFL's problem and coaches getting interviews after the coach has already been hired, et cetera, et cetera. But there is no excuse whatsoever. It's completely unrighteous that the SEC, in the environment, the schools, the population, the states, and the quality of black coaches at various Power 5, non-Power 5 teams around the country, including head coaches and assistants, coordinators, whatever, that there are 0 head coaches black in the SEC. It's truly a disgrace. And the only way to change it is for Sankey and his power brokers, who happen to be WASPs, him and the top other 2 guys in the SEC conference are all white Anglo-Saxon. So do they really have a sense of this issue? Probably not. But the only way to change it is to implement an affirmative action program that defines a minimum number of coaches, that forces the pressure on the institutions to have to hire if the don't meet that. And I want to get your comments and thoughts on that issue more than anything.
Well, Pat, thank you. You raise a lot of important questions. As far as the affirmative action part of it, I agree with a lot of what you've said. I don't know from a constitutional standpoint. When I mean constitution, I'm not speaking the United States Constitution. I'm speaking the Constitution of the SEC, how it reads, and you know whether the commissioner has that power or doesn't. I think it's a fair point, though, that there should be more representation. I'm in complete agreement with you. And at times, the SEC has been there. I'll never forget writing an article about 10 years ago about a game that we didn't really even pay attention to. And it was significant because you had two black head coaches in the game, Joker Phillips from Kentucky and I believe it was Mason at Vanderbilt. But it's an issue. I remember talking to Sylvester Croom a couple of months ago, and he felt like we were going the wrong way. But I appreciate your call, nevertheless. Thank you very much. Let's check out Mike, who is up next in Atlanta. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Paul, second time caller. I really enjoy your show, man.
Thank you.
Paul, listen, I wanted to take exception with the previous caller. Really, in the way the thing is presented as far as his affirmative action, my dad was a high school teacher and coach, and he had an opportunity to go into city administration about the time that the original affirmative action programs came in. And after getting his master's degree, which was a requirement, and meeting all the other requirements that they asked him to do, when he came back, he did not get the job simply because of the color of his skin. And I have been against this all along. Whatever happened to most qualified? I don't care if you're black, white, blue, or green. If you're the most qualified man for a job, you should get the job. To me, it is reverse discrimination when a man works so hard to make himself qualified, only to be denied because of something he cannot control, like the color of his skin. And I'm speaking on behalf of blacks, whites, or any other race. To me, most qualified should get the job in every case. And that's really all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And we head to the break on that positive note. More of your phone calls right here.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, let's take more phone calls here, and Dan is up next. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Paul. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
You have an exclusive club of I drove my car to New York from South Florida with my parents for summer vacation.
That's those were long trips, as I remember them.
Yeah, they were.
But you got to see the whole country, though.
Well, yeah, but you know, for a 10-year-old, it's pretty exciting in some ways. You get to stay in a motel, go in a swimming pool, and all that good stuff.
I think we did that when I was 10 as well, or maybe a little younger, maybe 7 or 8. But we did the.
They paroled me from doing that after the. I was 10, 11, 12, 13. Then they figured something else to do with me in the summer.
Yeah. My parents tried to get to pickle me off as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Dad had a large family in New York. He was an Irish immigrant, one of 21 kids.
Oh, man.
And, I was dragged around like the prize bull to all my aunts and uncles. So.
20? I don't know. That's one of the bigger families I've heard.
Yeah. Well, it was a New York Times article when Granny came into the country, and this is your prototype Irish Catholic Granny. That's even in America, that's a large family. He goes, he said, the little ones are great comforting, and the big ones take care of themselves.
Now, Dan, I don't want you to take this as a slam on your homeland, but I can only imagine what the liquor bill was every month.
Well, actually, Granny ran the village pub, and Pop was the village tailor, and it was during the Troubles, and they left quickly.
My grandfather on my mother's side was a tailor as well.
Yeah, so it was different, you know. And I mean, but Granny was, you know, she should have been in the John O'Hara movie, Quiet Man movie, you know.
That's funny. That is great.
Oh, one other career for you when you step down from this. You would be a great straight man. You and Handsome Joe, you could do a routine.
Well, I'm thinking about that. So we could do, I'm looking for a new career. And based on what I heard, we had a nice gentleman call earlier who said he used to run retirement homes. I think there's money in doing vaudeville at retirement homes, don't you?
Oh yeah. I can
Handsome
tell you.
Joe and I, we go in. He's the comedian. I'm the straight guy. And then we bring a couple of other people along, depending on where we are.
Yeah, I mean, you're Bud Abbott. He's Lou Costello.
Yeah,
that's it.
The assisted living tour presented by Geritol.
Yeah.
That's great. Hey, Dan, I'd love to hear more about that family of yours. That's truly remarkable. Bob is calling next. Hey, Bob. Bob, you there?
Bob or Buff?
Whatever your name is, you're welcome to join us. Go right ahead.
Oh, hey. Well, do they still make Geritol, man?
I don't. Is Geritol still a product? I don't even know. It used to be.
I don't know. Anyway, you know what? Jimbo Fisher, Kirby Smart, 2 and 3. Who cares? We all know who number one is, right?
Right.
Anyway, the reason I'm calling in is, you think The Legend could copyright The Legend as long as he don't use The Legend of Ohio State?
Copyrights are not that difficult generally, but I think when you're
trying
to...
He could get T-shirts. You know, he could get a real T-shirt, so I, man, wouldn't have to look at his letters well enough.
I mean, there's a lot of wasted money on copyright. And I've done that before. I had to copyright something once, and it was a complete and total waste of money.
He could get hats and T-shirts made up so his letters don't fall off like I-Man.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
Well, thanks for the call. Trey is up next in Arkansas. Hello, Trey.
Howdy, Paul.
Howdy.
Great show.
Thank you.
I have a question. Would you take, Kirby Smart or Jimbo Fisher?
Just for any program? Is that what you're asking me?
Who would you take?
Well, I would probably go with Kirby Smart because I think he's about 10 years younger. I think he's a little more moderate in terms of just his emotions. They're both outstanding coaches. One is a brilliant offensive mind. The other one speaks for itself on the defensive side. But I would probably tend toward Kirby.
Yeah. That's who I was thinking about, too.
Well,
see you later.
I mean, Jimbo has a little more experience, but, you know, they both are going to stand up pretty well. Hey, thank you very, very much. Austin is in Lexington. Hello, Austin.
Hey there, Paul. I wanted to ask you a question specifically about, Kentucky football. Because, you know, I assume that most of your callers probably aren't going out of their way to watch the blue and white in the fall. But for those that don't know, especially, Will Levis has skyrocketed. I mean, his stock just through this offseason has absolutely skyrocketed. Last I saw, his draft projection right now is sitting around 6 from most sources. And I just wanted to get your opinion. Have you by chance, you know, seen any of his, you know, progression through this offseason? And if you have, do you think that the stock is the hype, I should say, is warranted?
Yeah, Austin, thank you for the call. I haven't personally seen it, but I've heard others say what you have pointed out there. So I will trust them. We'll talk to Mark Stoops here in the coming weeks and get his vision of it as well. Now, he's going through some changes from a coordinator standpoint. That's always something you have to keep your eye on. But ultimately, he has made the move, a little bit like Corral did a year ago. We'll take a break. Two more hours to go. Tamika Catchings is up next.